News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9 WUVR. Welcome back to our program with George Newart of George Newart Construction and Trusted Rentals Automotive in Newport and Sunapee, respectively. Actually, not respectively, it's the opposite. GMN Construction's in Sunapee, Trusted Rentals in Newport. Good morning, George.
Hey, how are you doing, Matt?
Doing all right, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
We've gone through the trades pretty extensively, yeah. And then last week we kind of pivoted into the unlicensed trade. Yeah. So I think we kind of got through most of that, but I think there's still a little bit more.
I'm a little out of it today because for the last 2 days we've been tearing down this humongous house in Unity, New Hampshire. It burnt in November and we've been out there. We moved 20 40-yard dumpsters worth of debris. Like we literally tore this multi-million dollar house down and loaded it into dumpsters. And I actually worked on this house in 1995. I worked on this house for Bill Ostrom. It was actually for the owners of UPS. So Bill Cotter had this house built. Bill Ostrom built it in 1995. And I worked on it then. And it caught fire in November. And so we tore it down. So we know the previous owners. And it was amazing. The thing, it was just amazing how well it was built and just didn't want to come apart. It's crazy to me to think of these. It takes a year. That house probably took a year and a half to build. Has a pond. Like, we get there and there's geese in the pond and turkeys gobbling. Like, it's out in the middle of nowhere. You'd never know that this house with an apple orchard is like sitting out there with its own private pond, but we ended up tearing it down.
Wow.
And it's kind of a damn shame when you think takes a year and a half to build, and we had it torn down on the deck in 2 days, basically.
Are you rebuilding something else?
Eventually, it'll be the same footprint, the same foundation footprint, but the configuration is going to be different. So, you know, the kind of house is kind of sobering to me because, you know, it took a long time to build, at least, I don't know exactly, but at least a year and a half. And then it's absolutely beautiful. It has a beautiful pond. It has seating patios and it has fire pits. And it was like, it has an apple orchard. And it's just absolutely the most beautiful place ever. Like, it's literally like a piece of heaven. It sits on this little hill.
Oh, I mean, at least that's all still there.
It is all there. And then 3 months after it was built and Bill moved in, he died.
Ugh.
3 months.
Wow.
And so, I don't know. It's kind of like one of those sobering things where you're like, seriously?
Yeah, you just never know.
So we had two excavators there. Naughton and Son did the disposal. Those guys were awesome. They were absolutely unbelievable. They were great. They had good timing. One of the things I've learned about these projects is that, you know, sometimes like I'm like a really responsible dude. Like there's a lot on my shoulders every day and I'm like the orchestra of the circus.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you take truck drivers like Naughton and Sons guys, like they drive truck, right? And you're like, oh, these guys are just like truck drivers. But then you start interacting with them and you realize that these guys are part of your team.
Right.
And you're like, okay. After a couple of loads in and out, I think Damon was one of the guys, the main, there were two truck drivers. One had just started fairly new and the other one had been there for 6 years. He said it was the largest teardown he's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, how do you think we should do this? And sometimes I think what I'm doing as I get a little older is I'm kind of deferring to where I think the expertise is and relying on its input. And it was kind of really effective in this case because he was like, listen, let's put two dumpsters there. You can take that dumpster. When this dumpster's full, I'll take it. You can take that other dumpster. You can drag it over here. And we're like, he's kind of like laying out how we do this. And I was like, all right, go.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right.
So it's kind of a neat, but it was kind of sobering. Like the construction project was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just building a house, but it was the grounds and like
the land construction.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then I learned earlier, maybe 3 or 4 months ago when I talked to Bill Ostrom, and Bill says that the foundation actually got poured 1 year and there was some controversy about continuing with the build, and the house was slated to start, and Bill got contacted by the owner and they couldn't continue. So
there's like a wetland thing or something?
I don't know. Yeah. So they ended up filling the entire foundation in with sand, like have it not be there.
Interesting.
And Bill was like, what are we doing? And so in order to preserve it, because the frost wrecks everything, they filled it in with sand. And then Bill Obacotter and Jim Casey, Casey Family Services is a national organization that helps things, I don't know, people, families, KC Family Services. So those two guys started UPS.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Obacotter, when the property the property stalled, the build stalled. He paid for Bill and his whole company, all his crew and everything, to go over to Arrowhead. I guess Arrowhead in Claremont had a humongous renovation done, and they made offices and stuff out of it. Mm-hmm. That was all funded by Bill Obacotter.
Interesting.
And Bill Ostrom built it.
Huh.
Because Bill was like, listen, I don't want to leave you and your guys stranded. Like, you blocked this time out to build my house.
Right.
But now you can't build my house. What else are we going to do? And he's like, he funded the whole, not only to fill the house in, but he funded the whole Arrowhead thing in, I'm going to say 1993 or 1994 somewhere. I know the house had 1995 stuff in it. So I'm going to say somewhere between 1990 and 1995, Arrowhead skiway renovation got done. So it's kind of interesting. But it's kind of sobering. You know, you're in this house and it was horrible.
Yeah.
Like, literally, the house burned November 8th and, like, they just walked out. Like, an entire home. They just walked out. So we were able to, you know, scavenge some stuff from the house and things like that. But the smoke damage was, you know, it's one of the things, one of my talking points earlier is, if you ever want to know what happens to a house with a metal roof, the house literally just cooks.
Right.
Like a like a turkey. Mm-hmm. Like, it cooks from the inside because the metal won't let anything out.
It's just an oven.
It's an oven.
Effectively.
And the smoke damage was obscene. It was really bad. I don't even think, the fire was substantial. The fire probably consumed 30 or 40% of the house.
Yeah.
But the smoke damage was unbelievable. Wow. So, I don't know. It was just kind of sobering tearing this extremely well-built house down with an excavator that just doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's me that doesn't care. One or the other.
Could be the operator.
It was a job. We had to do it. So.
Does that happen like routinely, like where you have people that own houses that are kind of a little meh, and then they just decide to tear the whole thing down, like, on the same property and build another one right in the same exact place?
Yeah, they can. It all depends on the regulation. So if you're on the lake and you want to do that, the restrictions about what you can and cannot do, like, technically on the footprint, quote unquote, you have to mirror the footprint. Mm-hmm. You don't have to mirror the footprint, but you're entitled to build on the footprint. But then if you wanted to extend it or expand it, or you want to go up, the permitting kind of gets complicated.
Yeah,
but to answer your question, I don't know if this year is as robust as previous years, but we have done a substantial Burmer Road, like Perkins Pond. We've done a pretty substantial amount of teardowns where you just, people's needs for the home changes, and you're like,
I think that, and
these aren't camps anymore, like, their houses.
Well, I think, I mean, especially with, you know, like, New Hampshire real estate being so limited for availability these days, I think, you know, people are kind of just taking up whatever they can get. Absolutely. Even if it's a place that's, you know, condemned, you know, just take the property itself, just take it down and build something new up. So
my little house in George's Mills is 524 square feet. It's on 0.14 of an acre. 0.14.
Wow.
So 1/10 and a bit more of an acre. And it just got reassessed at $325,000.
Yeah, that's insane.
Two-car garage underneath. I live above it.
Yep.
And that was the other thing I wanted to mention, too, that I'm going to have an open house for my house.
You have, like, a rough time frame? Or?
I don't know. Maybe in the next month or so. I'm going to have an open house at my house that hopefully will generate some interest in how we can live in smaller spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And they're challenging. They're a little problematic because you can't really get away, if you have a spouse or a partner, you can't really get away from them.
Right.
But carrying costs are super low. Like, it is a really cool house for a person or couple that has very low carrying costs and is easy to maintain, and just, you're able to focus your life on other things like camping or hiking or whatever,
living.
Mountain biking, living, exactly, instead of being married to this monstrosity.
Right.
So, I don't know. My perspective.
I have a similar perspective. I just think that, I mean, how much space does anyone actually use?
Oh my God.
I feel like those houses that are just bigger and bigger, it's just like, how much time are you actually spending in 90% of that house? You probably have a favorite room that you spend most of your time in, and then the rest of it's just sitting there just vacant.
I've asked quite a few of my customers, like, okay, so you're in, so school gets out in June, and it is June, right?
Yeah,
June. Yeah. So you have 3 months, basically, and you spend $2 million on a house, and you live in it basically 3 months a year. You're in it 3 months a year. Like, is it really worth all of that? And basically their answers are, well, there's no water moccasins.
Yeah.
There's no alligators. Mm-hmm. There's no giant water spiders. There's, like, this peace of mind that the lakes region around us affords people that seem to chime in to the idea that it's a kind of a safe haven. And so
whether
they choose to come up to go skiing, or whether they choose to rent it, or whether they choose to just have it as an, they just have it available.
Yeah.
It adds an element to their life that otherwise they might not have. And they really seem to enjoy it. And I kind of see that, but it is a lot of money to spend on something that you have as an,
like a commodity, like a side commodity.
It's an accent to your life, right, just as an option.
Yeah.
2 years ago, I Airbnb'd my house in George's Mills from December 7th to March 3rd or 4th, like the season of skiing.
Yep.
And they only wanted it. They were from Massachusetts. They only wanted it for weekends. I think that they wanted it to ski, but they wanted it to be available when they had free time. And
so they took the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just 3 months.
For all like weekdays too and everything?
Whenever.
Wow.
So they would just come up and so in any event. All right. It was just kind of sobering tearing that house down and being like, oh my God, this thing's leaving in dumpsters. And
especially like when you were the one to put it up.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So you spend a year and a half building something. In 2 days, it was loaded and gone. So
I can see where that would be amazing.
It is. It kind of hurts.
Yeah.
So we're there now. I just left there today. There were steel beams. I have to take some steel beams out, bring them to my shop. And, you know, we're cleaning up. We did an absolute bozo mistake. I cannot believe it. We never covered the stair hole from the main floor level to the basement. We never covered it. We should have put cleats around the inside. It's basically a drywall shaft. We should have put cleats around the inside, and we should have put 3/4 plywood down to keep debris from going down the stair hole.
Okay.
Can you imagine? Like, the stair hole right now is chucker block like a can of sardines.
Yeah.
Of debris that we are now digging out and having to put in barrels and walk up the like absolute bozo.
Ugh.
And I never even thought about it till like it was not safe to go in the building. So we have a huge chimney we have to take down too. So we're gonna do that kind of piecemeal with jackhammers and stuff. But it's kind of neat, you know. The trades are not all about building,
right?
Sometimes they're about tearing down. But there will be a new house built there at some point. It's going to be designed here. So it's an insurance job. So I hope to be the one building it, but we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So moving along, last couple of weeks we've been talking about the licensed and unlicensed trades. And basically I just wanted to kind of shed some light on more of the non-licensed trades. I know last week we talked about drywall because the art of drywall is ancient.
Yep.
And, you know, today we kind of killed that bird.
Mm-hmm.
Today there are other non-licensed trades, for instance, painting, and there is, believe it or not, heating. Heating is an unlicensed trade.
Really?
Yeah. Installation of heating systems. You can't hook up the gas and the propane, but
stove installation.
Yeah. So you can go buy a cast iron boiler and you can go put it in your house, or you can go put it in somebody else's house. Like, heating is not licensed.
Hmm.
But propane, anything to do with domestic hot water, if you're going to drink it, that is a licensed trade. That is technically plumbing,
which I feel like is a good thing.
Yeah, that is a good thing.
Especially if you're consuming it. Yeah.
You know, so from a non-licensed trade, if you look at me, for instance, like, I consider myself, if anybody says, oh, George, what do you do? Like, somehow your identity is what you do. And I am a framer. Like, that's how I started my business. Is I started out doing finish work and got sick and tired of working behind all these people that didn't care to frame properly. So it made my job difficult. So I learned how to frame. I had a mentor, Eugene Valley, that is in Claremont now, and he worked for Bill Ostrom for 13 or 15 years. And Gene was a really good framer, and he's also an exceptional Finnish guy too. So when I got working for Bill, Eugene was the foreman on several jobs on the lake, big, humongous monstrosity jobs that Bill builds. And I just started paying attention to how things get framed. In other words, it's the stuff that's in the wall. It's the stuff that's hidden. It's kind of a job that you're like, all your work gets covered up. You're kind of like, oh, great. Like, you don't see any of the work because it gets covered up, like electricians and plumbers, you know? But I was able to identify something that came to me naturally, and that is being able to see things three-dimensionally. And I could see, like, when you build a house, you have to build a house from the roof down. You have to think about your snow loads and your point loads. You have to think about how this roof holds up snow, like, and an amazing amount of weather. If you think about, you know, you get a 2-foot snowstorm and then it starts raining, like, there are perfect storms that cause collapses.
Right.
So I was able to just kind of identify this skill that I had, and I'm able to see things. Like if someone says it's, if someone, like I got a job recently, a really nice house up above Sunapee High School. And you know, when you think about what things look one dimensionally on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. I can look at that one dimensional thing and actually build it from the roof down, mm-hmm. see it done. And I just kind of, I don't know, discovered that I had this ability to like see things done. Yeah. And so I work backwards. I take the finished product and I work backwards from it because I want to put all the successive steps in the right order to make a good build, but I have to start with the roof. But ironically, the roof is the last thing you build. So from that standpoint, you know, I mean, you can go to school for being a framer. If you take me, let's analyze me, for instance. You can go to school. You can be a structural engineer. You can like, you know, there's degrees that you can get that assist in your skill set, but there's nothing like going to a job and working for someone that knows what they're doing, like myself, mm-hmm. and going there and learning what I consider the variables. The variables are that every time you're on a job, there it's different. The spans are different. The heights are different. The widths are different. The depths are different. Like everything's different. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a good understanding of the variables. And the variables is what makes you decide to do, to put one floor joist or one size beam in versus another. So it's kind of like, I bet you if you called like 10 framing companies right now, there's Boulay Framing from Vermont that does a lot of McGray and Nichols work. You know, mm-hmm. I've met these guys. They know what they're doing.
Yep.
I'm, you know, did they go to school? I don't know. Probably not, but they could have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's you go to school for the business end of things. You go to right. school to learn management or marketing, and yeah. then you learn the trade, and then you incorporate whatever degree you have into that as a promotion.
Yeah, I remember back a few years ago, I just think it's funny because there's, so a lot of people don't really realize that there's different types of intelligences. And, you know, I think everyone's just kind of like obsessed with like the whole IQ thing, yeah, you know, like, definitely. You know, like your ability to retain knowledge and
I'm
trivia.
Not that
and
right. I can tell you that.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, but that's like that's the point no. of it is that there's I don't know how many. I think it's like a dozen, give or take, of different types of intelligences that people can be proficient in. So, I mean, somebody could be, you know, very bad at, you know, writing or yeah. or reading or, you know, like their ability to process information. Yeah. But they could also be like a borderline genius in something yeah. like a spatial intelligence.
Exactly.
And like spatial, like I have a really high spatial intelligence. So like I'm able to see like volume, like in my head of like, you know, like what will fit where and,
yeah.
and stuff like that. And I have a good feel for that, like, you know, like dimensions and stuff yeah. like that. So yeah.
I got a lot of flack recently from a girl I was seeing, and she said to me that sometimes in my speech I'm self-deprecating, meaning that I'm kind of like down on myself.
Yeah.
And I have kind of reevaluated. I've always kind of lived under this thought. I'm actually working on it. Mm-hmm. Like in my brain, I'm working on the fact that I cannot say I'm not that smart or I'm not that bright, because that's not true. I am a smart, bright guy. I'm right. smart and bright.
I mean, it'd be hard to have two businesses that right, are successful if
right.
you weren't.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't have a plaque hanging on the wall, but what I do have is
common sense.
I'm kind of a goofball, but I really enjoy having fun every day and bringing levity to otherwise heavy situations and kind of setting the tone for keeping things light and airy, and but also being responsible and doing a good job for the customer and realizing that, you know, our bills get paid by satisfied people. Mm-hmm. So I am a bright guy, and it's taken me a long time to say that, because when I was growing up, my father valued the educational system, and if you didn't have an education, you were kind of like, well, what are you if you're not?
Right. Well, I feel like that whole generation kind of was at the same mindset, where it's like you have to go to college to be successful.
And that's today. It is
still very prevalent. Yeah.
It is.
I feel like it's slowly kind of starting to shift a little bit, like very recently, but it still is very much present. Yeah. I mean, people think that you need to have a 4-year degree to be able to be successful in anything. It's not true.
It's one of the things I want people to either email in or call in about, is what their perspective is on maybe there's an angle here we're missing. Maybe there's something I'm missing, but I understand that, you know, like I was just listening to these two guys. What's the show we talked about? Right Side Up. And yep. there was like a news broadcast in between or something. And they were talking about, it was the investment show there. Financial Exchange. Yeah. Financial Exchange. And they were talking about like the craze now, the absolute, everyone's on the edge of their seat about AI. There's several AI companies and everyone's weighing in, Google and Facebook is now what? Meta? Like, right. Everyone's weighing in to this one company. I can't remember its name, but that's like, that's the craze now. And car building, Tesla was worth $1.2 trillion in 2021, and it's worth $400 billion now. So, you know, yeah. There's definitely, so, we seem to be always wanting to look for the next thing. Mm-hmm. The next thing is AI. I don't know if you've ever been on ChatGPT or
anything. Oh, it's crazy.
I can't even get it. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing? And yeah. They're trying to figure out how AI, artificial intelligence, is. I don't know if any of you have been on ChatGPT, but go to ChatGPT and just put in a topic.
Right.
You could put in, just as an example, I'm looking at Matt's headphones. You could put in, tell me what the evolution is of headphones. Mm. The thing just starts spitting out. Paragraph after paragraph.
And it's not even that. It's not just, you know.
What is happening?
Yeah. Well, the scariest parts to me about AI are, one, there's really no regulation of it to be heard of, like governmental-wise. You know, there's no, like, hard limits of, like, this is how far we should go before we should stop and evaluate and think about the next steps.
You mean like electric scooters that go 70 miles an hour?
Yeah, right.
And there's no regulation?
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right, moving on.
Or the fact that, I mean, every iteration of even something like a ChatGPT. So, I mean, there's different versions, obviously, as they update. So, I mean, ChatGPT 3.5 is probably the one that most people use. But they have, you know, 4.0, 4.5 now. There's going to be like a 5 soon. And if you actually go between like the modules and put in the same exact info in each of the updated iterations, the difference is night and day. I mean, the thing learns so fast, and it's scary. And I think the fact that we just have no plan of how to regulate this thing before it could potentially become self-aware and then just decide that it doesn't want to be shut off anymore.
Okay,
it's
so,
a little scary.
So do you know where self-aware? Well, self-aware is kind of a famous statement, because in the first Terminator movie in 19...
James Cameron tried to warn us.
It's not funny.
No, it's not.
The system became self-aware.
It did. I mean, we're seeing that right now.
I mean, how often is the future foretold by the past?
Right.
I mean, the Matrix movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to be like some doomsdayer.
Right.
But it's pretty ridiculous when you think about self-awareness. Right. Like, what's to prevent? And
right.
I don't know. I can't get it. My imagination goes to like dark places. Like,
well, I think most people do. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if aliens, you know, came to Earth, you know, like everyone, the vast majority of people presume they're just going to be malevolent and want to just eradicate us. We just go that way, you know. It's like we always just presume everything's inherently evil and bad, and we, you know, we rarely look at the side that like, oh, maybe they're benevolent, maybe like they want to help us, or
yeah,
you know,
right.
So
you know, the relativity to the trades is a house for 100 years from now going to be built out of wood? Probably. I mean, if you look at the relevance of these conversations I'm having, the relevance is that I'm taking stock in the fact that the woodworking trade we have is going to be the tools you're going to go into Home Depot 50 years from now, and you're still going to have skill saws, and you're still going to have, you know, the battery technology is changing, but the basic premise of the tools are going to be the same. You have to cut straight, and things have to be at a right angle.
Right. Have to put nails and things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you look at the renewability of trees, and you look at the forest industry, and you look at like what we've developed and built over time, it fits perfectly in with the model of the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it's sustainable.
Are we going to go to Mars? Or are we going to go to the moon and live in a bubble? I mean, I'm sure there's probably some that are going to do that.
But, right.
So that's what I like about the trades. I like about the trades is that toilet technology, sink technology, like the toilet technology of flushing a toilet. Like when you think about the simple parts of our existence that are probably going to be exactly the same with slight tweaks 50 years from now. I just don't see it. But then again, maybe I'm not forward thinking enough to realize that the way we treat waste and the way we deal with, you know, our wastewater, I'm sure there's going to be improvements in our wastewater treatment plants, but it's one of the hottest things. My plumber's son is, you know, a civil engineer working for wastewater treatment plants that are just $180 million, $250 million wastewater plants that it's very high on the list of priorities for municipalities to do. Another thing is bridges. You know, bridges are, you know, what was the show called again? Right Side Up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were highlighting about the number of bridges in Vermont that are like unpassable. It's like 75 bridges.
It's kind of ridiculous. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I mean, even in New Hampshire, I mean, like, we still have a huge percentage of bridges that are on the red list of things that need repaired direly. So, I mean, it's, I don't know at what point we stopped upgrading or keeping things current, but obviously somewhere along the way we just
past got forgotten.
It did. And now we're paying the price by just having, you know, like 80 construction projects every summer where you can't pass through like less than like 3 hours.
The amount of money that this nation is going to need to spend in infrastructure, if you just consider the fact that our power lines are on average anywhere between 30 and 60 years old. Our power lines, our power grid
is so old.
It's unbelievable.
It's so antiquated.
So you know, if you want to expand this further into a construction direction that requires a certificate, you know, you can take like Sean Sleeper's son he went to upstate New York, can't remember the name of the college, but they specialized in civil engineering, and he got Clarkson was its name, and he got a civil engineering degree. He's like 23 years old, making $140,000 a year.
Yeah.
And he I'm not saying he's not gifted and he's not skilled, but it's not super high pressure work.
Mm-hmm.
And the relevance of it is that you can take the trades in its licensed and non-licensed form and have a really viable vocation that can be satisfying. I always think of it as not the job itself, but it also can be very satisfying. So, you know, the thing is that all of this conversation is basically about just helping people kind of, if Matt and I are sitting here just talking, and if we could have, I mean, before we got on the air, we had a show about other issues, and we were like, well, there's our show right there.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to address relevant issues in a conversational way that can hopefully set an example or lay a framework for how other people in their homes can have just regular conversations about stuff that matters, and maybe through a dialogue of just discussing it as normal, we can maybe incorporate it more in our life as something that might happen on a normal level.
Right.
So I did get contacted yesterday by Lebanon Daigle, I think her name is. I can't remember her first name, but she's the guidance counselor in Lebanon, and said that they're going to be evaluating students and... Are we nearing graduation? Yeah.
About a month out.
So they're going to be evaluating candidates for my scholarship. And she wondered whether it was still available and viable and all this stuff, and whether it's reoccurring year after year. And so we're hopefully, fingers crossed, that we might have a candidate this year. Either through
Navy. That'd be nice just like year to year, just to see it slowly, you know.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. Yeah. So the other thing is the Granite State Trade School down there in Raymond.
Yep.
You can call them or go to their website and just look at what's there and say, hey, maybe I'd like to do that. Maybe I'd like to do that. So two things. We're pretty much out of time. Okay. So two things. First of all, I want to leave this broadcast as we're going to do two things exciting coming up. So first of all, it's been since COVID that we had to stop we called them demo days, where we had days at the shop where we had kids come up and run equipment on Saturday. Yep. So we're going to start implementing that. Probably maybe June will be the month that we start demo days. So where parents can bring their kids or whatever. We don't care who it is. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you don't even have to have kids.
Boys, I don't care who it is. Yeah. Like, anybody that has
an it's not just for kids either. You can just be an adult that's just interested in that. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So that's going to happen the last weekend of, let's just say, June, July, August, September, probably 4 or 5 months. Yeah. The last weekend, the last Saturday from 9 to noon is when we did it. But we haven't done it since COVID. 2019.
Yeah, right.
So... No, it's been 5 years. Fall of 2018, because COVID was March of 2019, right?
No, 2020.
2020.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's been 5 years.
So we're going to implement that. And then we're also going to, I have an assistant, her name is Shane, and Shane is going to be setting up some things like this in addition to doing the open house at my house, which is 1002 Main Street in George's Mill. So it's right on the corner of Old Main Street and Route 11. So we're going to do an open house and basically try to, again, get people engage in the conversation of how we can lessen our footprint so that we just maybe live. I'm not asking people to be as extreme as I am, but just have people view a very small house. The use of space is perfect. You're not going to find 1 inch. I even have a wood stove. You're not going to find 1 inch of wasted space. It's really awesome. And it has everything that a huge house has.
Right.
Yeah. It's just...
That's the crazy part.
Little. Yeah. I mean, you think about campers. I lived in a camper for 5 years in the harbor. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I was friends with everybody then. I had a tow-behind camper in Sunapee Harbor for 5 years on the Woodbine property. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. But you think about it. Everything's just about compressing your life into a smaller space.
Yeah.
But we're such pack rats, it's ridiculous. So those are the two things I want to announce is demo days are coming back at the shop. Skid steers, mini excavators, manless, vibratory rollers. Like, we're getting a new skid steer this week. Like, we're, again, embarking on a growth. We have a growth mentality now at the shop. And we have a new loader. Oh, the Kubota loader, right? We could we could have kids run around in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing cooks, too. It's crazy. So so we're going to do that. And then an open house in my house in George's Mill. So those are the two things.
Perfect. And we'll talk more about those as they get closer and closer. Right. But there also this edition of our show with George Neuwirth. Of course, you can listen online to previous episodes at WNTK.com. And you can also go over to Podbean.com and search George Neuwirth Show. And it'll pop up with our previous episodes there as well. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you again next Friday with George at 8:30 on News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9 WUVR.